I'm David Marcus, host of Drinks with the Deal. And today our guest is Michael Chow, an M&A partner at Simpson Thacher in New York. Michael, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good to be here.
So we're going to talk about your career arc on today's podcast, how you ended up at Simpson and how you ended up in M&A, your career as an associate, and then as a young partner, what you enjoy about the job, and then how you decompress from the job. So with that, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to the law.
Yeah, sure. I guess I'd probably go back to college. I went to Yale for college. I was actually pre-med back then. So probably not the most unfamiliar story of people eventually making their way to the law. But I was pre-med when I first started in college. And it was actually a sort of freshman writing class that I had taken in part to satisfy like pre-med requirements. And instead of taking, I think there was maybe one more focused on like science or medical writing. I think I was like, well, let's do something a little different. Got plenty of time for that. And ended up taking a class that was sort of more focused on legal writing and found it was something that I actually, you know, had really enjoyed, you know, really enjoyed that style of like thinking and writing. And, you know, really sort of, I think, sent me down the path of thinking about law school. Or maybe it was also that I was taking organic chemistry at the same time. And those two together, you know, I think really helped me see the light, I guess. From then, I went to UVA for law school as a 1L summer. I had spent some time in a court of appeals, judges' chambers, really was thinking at that point that I was going to be or wanted to be an appellate lawyer. So was in the judges' chambers for part of that summer. And, you know, spent some time doing some of the things you'd expect to do as an appellate clerk, writing a bench memo, researching cases. I think there was a lot that was interesting. I enjoyed learning about vastly different areas of law. You would get cases and there'd be areas of law you didn't even know about, right? It's like when people think of admiralty and there's all sorts of statutes on the books to address very specific areas that you would not come across in day-to-day life. And that part was particularly interesting, but the dynamics or the style of that type of practice and that type of work ultimately didn't appeal to me. Being in an office, researching and writing, it was a very monastic way that I know some people very much enjoy. They love being able to be in the office without being disturbed and just sort of dive into a case. But I really felt that I wanted something a bit more dynamic, fast-paced, and with more interaction with others in my day-to-day.
So contrast that experience with then your 2L summer, which you spent at Simpson.
So for my 2L summer, going through the 2L interview process, corporate law was something that I was thinking that I would explore, especially moving away from the dreams of being an appellate lawyer. As I think many law students, you know, they don't really have exposure to corporate law prior to law school. And that was certainly the case for me. But it was something that I wanted to explore over my 2L summer. And Simpson was a great place for that. I think a number of firms have various ways they structure the summer. And Simpson's summer is actually very unstructured. I think I probably ended up taking an assignment from almost every group in the firm just to really explore and see all that's out there. And it was actually, I think, one of my last assignments over the summer that confirmed that corporate law was going to be right for me. I had gotten staffed to an M&A deal along with another summer associate. It was probably the most real experience that I think we had gotten over the summer. It was a live deal. It was moving quickly, though I guess quickly for 2013. I think quickly in 2024 means something a little bit different, but quick for back then. And we were added to the team to help due diligence. We were working together, having team meetings, doing diligence, all to late in the evening, which again, for a summer associate, late was probably like 10 p.m., but it was actually, you know, something pretty exciting. I think we really liked what we were doing. And ultimately, when I came back to Simpson as a first-year associate, I did an M&A rotation and ultimately chose M&A, which I think was the same for the other summer who was on the deal with me.
So talk about why you picked M&A after your rotations, which would have given you obviously a much better sense of various practices. And then talk about a formative deal or two when you were a junior and mid-level associate.
Yeah, I think in M&A, you just see a breadth that you don't in most other corporate groups. I think of like when the general counsel has a problem at a company, right? I feel like M&A lawyers are often the one to get a call being like, I have this issue. It doesn't fit neatly into a specific bucket, but like, I need help with this, right? And I think that's something that was particularly appealing to me. You can't really be an M&A lawyer if you're afraid of uncertainty, or you really want to be the master of something specific and you don't like something that is unfamiliar. M&A is usually not the right group, but that was something that I liked. I liked coming across new problems, learning about new companies and their businesses. And I think it's something that you really get the most chances to do in M&A.
And then talk about whether it was a pivotal deal early in your career that convinced you that you not only would enjoy this, but you could do it at a high level.
Yeah, I often think back, there is a deal when I was a third year associate, and I had, I think, recently rotated back into the M&A group permanently. And it was a deal for Blackstone. I was staffed as the mid-level associate. It was my first time, at least in M&A, managing a junior associate. Also, then there was the senior associate on the deal. And we had a deal that was, again, moving fairly quickly. I want to say we probably ended up doing diligence and signing the deal and call it a week and a half, which at that time, I think was probably one of the fastest deals I had done until the boom of 2021. But I found that deal to be very exciting. I didn't mind staying up late nights to get the deal done. And then after we signed, the senior associate actually announced that she was going to move away from New York and was going to leave the firm, which meant that I got the battlefield promotion to be the mid-level and the senior associate to close the deal. And it was the, I think, first LBO that I had worked on as a mid-level. And now I would get to close the deal as a mid-level and senior. And it was certainly, I think, going back to the, if you like M&A or you don't like M&A, it's going to be about, in part, your ability to deal with the uncertain and the unknown. And I think closing an LBO for the first time, both as the mid-level and the senior, probably fits squarely within that. But I took that on. The deal closed, and it closed, I think, fairly smoothly. And it really just reinforced that I had made the right decision to be an M&A lawyer. And it also, I think, developed some of the relationships that I've, you know, relied on to this day. Since then, worked on countless more Blackstone deals and with a lot of the same people that I was working with on that deal.
And talk about your last couple of years before becoming a partner at the beginning of 2022. And being a senior associate during the pandemic, obviously when people were largely working remotely.
I think that was certainly a hard time for like many people. I don't know if there's anything particularly different about my experience compared to anyone else's, and certainly not anyone else's in New York working away, but one of the busiest times I think that's ever been seen in M&A and corporate deal work generally, all within the confines of a few hundred square feet apartments. But I think it really did show that relationships are critical, right? I think the relationships, both within the firm, with partners that I had been working with for years, as well as clients that I had been working with for years. And I think the strength of those relationships were important, as well as maintaining those even while doing so remotely.
What do you enjoy about the job, and how has that evolved over the course of your career?
I would really say that, going back a little bit, I think a theme throughout my interests of just, I like learning in the most fundamental way, right? Like, that's why I think appellate law was on the radar, because you're just going from case to case, not really tied to facts, or rather the facts are less critical than the legal overlay, and learning about very different types of law. And I think that's what I've found in M&A, is you've learned about a lot of different types of businesses, and then you learn about their relationships, and you get to just always be learning about something new and different. And even though you may have a merger, that merger may be structured differently, and very few deals are the same in M&A, which I think there's a bit more repetition in other areas of corporate law, where a lot of what you're focused on are more specific details and how those details change from deal to deal. Whereas in M&A, you have very large structural differences, economic differences that can really be reflected in a wide range of ways.
And you do both PE and strategic M&A. Talk about the differences in those two kinds of transactions and how that keeps your practice varied.
Yeah, you know, certainly at the end of the day, you're still working on M&A. I think when you work with private equity firms, doing deals are their business. So, you know, they're more adept at the day-to-day and the dynamics of a deal. And I think that's probably the greatest difference, is that when working with strategic clients, particularly those that don't do M&A very frequently, or they may go years without doing a deal, you definitely have a lot more of that counseling aspect, where you're making sure that they are understanding how the dynamics are going to play out. What is it that people are going to need to do? So they can both have the right expectations as well as manage their internal functional teams. But I actually find I like having those two areas, right? Working both with private equity and strategic clients, I think it makes me a better M&A lawyer for both. I like to think about like the public company M&A lawyer, the way that deals have gone over time. You see a lot of private equity firms that are buyers of public companies. It's not just another public company buying a public company. And I think there are certainly aspects of how a private equity firm thinks and how their deals are structured, that by doing private equity work, you're actually better able to advise a public company board on the deal itself.
How do you decompress from the job?
Well, you know, I think everyone has their own way of decompressing. For me, I actually like to try to have some more separation from the job. My partner is not a lawyer, so that helps. I don't go home and talk about law all the time. And I have a number of friends who are also not lawyers. So I think that is helpful to just create some separation, at least mentally, from when you're on, especially in M&A, when you're often on all the time. All the time being waking up to going to bed and sometimes having a dream about your deal. You know, I think it's good to have that mental space. And one of my primary interests, I'd say, outside of work is wine. Not the most unusual for a lawyer or for many people, but I think it's also helped me develop relationships with a number of people outside of the lawyers that I work with, and lawyers who are also my friends, especially in New York. I'm friends with a number of people who have restaurants, work in wine, and it's nice to have that sort of different perspective.
What do you most enjoy about wine? And then give us a bottle or two you've really enjoyed over the last several months.
Yeah, so I think a lot of what I enjoy about wine is going back to just that aspect of learning. with wine, there's just so many different regions in the world that produce wine. And even if you have the same grape, right, people drinking Pinot Noir or Chardonnay, but it's made in regions all over the world, the wines come out different. Learning about what it is that makes those wines different. And even wines that are produced in the, you know, same place, they differ from year to year. There's a wet, rainy vintage, and that affects the character of the wine. Or if it's a dry, hot vintage the next year, that affects the character of the wine. And I think the wine is something where you can really never master, because there's always another year. And especially these days, people are planting grapes in all sorts of different places. Like even in the New York wine industry is, you know, certainly booming and moving beyond the classics of Riesling. So that's really, you know, I think it ties all together to the always learning new things to stay engaged and excited about what it is you're doing, whether it's in the office or out.
And that answer, Michael, reminds me of the Oxford Companion to Wine, which is just this incredible volume that treats every region and every aspect of wine, from how you grow the plant to how people sell the wines, which is a big part of what makes it wine so fascinating.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think I will never achieve that level of mastery. And I think that's in part why I keep so many of those books at home, because I have to always go to them when I've got questions. But, you know, I think that's part of the appeal of wine and just trying to get as close as one can. I mean, I think being a lawyer, I'm never going to be able to do that. David, I don't know if you're familiar with William Kelly beyond his writing for Wine Advocate, where he reviews Champagne, Burgundy, but through his writing, now also has started to make wine as sort of an additional project. And he actually has the benefit of going to all of these different producers, learning about what they do. And he takes and picks and chooses from what it is he learns and is able to actually apply that. And I think absent that and making your own wine and working on it for a living, you know, you're never going to really get to that level, but it's still fun to try when you've got the time. And David, I realized I never got to your question about what I've had recently that I've enjoyed. You know, a number of other wine lovers drink a fair bit of Burgundy, but I think on a related vein, I actually had a really good German Spätburgunder recently, which for the non-wine people really just means Pinot Noir in Germany. I think on the theme of a lot of young people doing interesting things in wine, there's a producer in Germany, I think in the Mosel, like Jonas Dostert, who makes a Spätburgunder, very affordably priced if you can find it. I think it was like $40, $35, but is actually like really, really good. Unfortunately, I think they only made like 300 bottles of that. So after I drank the one that I had, I couldn't find it again. So hopefully the next vintage.
Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, David. Great talking to you.
For Drinks with a Deal, I'm David Marcus.